Nisambula Vinaka, you're listening to Dateline from RNZ Pacific. Nayadangu or Koroi Hawkins. Coming up.
We will play by the rule, play fair and square. And if they're not satisfied, well, court place is the place that we can meet.
Papua New Guinea's leader stands firm amid a political crisis.
It's better to be safe. I think we've been waiting for it, for something like this to happen.
Calls for vigilance in Samoa after their first positive COVID-19 test. Also, New Zealand is assisting Pacific countries with plans for COVID jabs. And
the total cost in storage, handling and container rental fees to the government of Vanuatu is $2.5 million.
Well-meaning donors are being urged to be more responsible in supporting Pacific disaster response efforts. Papua New Guinea's Prime Minister has urged the public to not get caught up in the country's political crisis, which has ended up in the courts. James Marape's government appears to have staved off a vote of no confidence by quickly passing the budget on Tuesday and adjourning Parliament to April. But the move is being challenged in court by the opposition, which gained a majority last week following a mass defection of government MPs. Johnny Blades has more.
After dozens of government MPs walked out on him last week, James Marape looked down for the count. The opposition leader Belden Nama played a political ploy, moving a motion to adjourn Parliament to early next month when a grace period on motions of no confidence lapses. But Parliament's Speaker Job Pomat subsequently ruled that the motion was wrongly entertained by his deputy and recalled Parliament. Former Prime Minister Peter O'Neill on the opposition side says the Speaker's ruling was flawed.
Flawed in the sense that in every occasion over the past 45 years, only the members of Parliament can adjourn Parliament by a resolution and a motion on the floor. When in fact Belden Nama on Friday moved the motion to suspend standing orders. When you suspend standing orders, that means the standing orders do not apply. 57 members gave him that authority. That is why he moved the motion.
In Tuesday's sitting, Parliament achieved quorum with less than half of all MPs present when the government passed its budget quickly without the usual required debate. Mr. O'Neill's legal team has now filed a court application challenging the legality of the sitting, which the opposition was largely unable to attend.
So Marape and the Speaker are making a mockery of the parliamentary system, the mandate of our people, the democracy that we have enjoyed for the last 45 years.
While this was happening, the embattled Prime Minister summoned public service department heads, including Police Commissioner and the Defence Forces Commander, for a special briefing. The message he gave them was reiterated to the public at large.
So let me at this time encourage our citizens, don't you worry about politics that is taking place. Remain focused at your job. Leave politics to politicians. Get on with your life. Remain focused. Public servants, members of our disciplined forces, asked to remain above politics, focus on your job.
Mr. Marape has dismissed Peter O'Neill's claim that Tuesday's adjournment was illegal. And he says just because the opposition decided to leave the capital and form a camp in remote Vanimo, it doesn't mean government services must come to a standstill.
Mr. O'Neill and his friends in the opposite side of the house are reminded that we will play by the rule, play fair and square. And if they're not satisfied, well, court place is the place that we can meet. In the meantime, government business runs, we're running government.
Mr. Marape had the option of adjourning Parliament to late July, within the last 12 months of Parliament's five-year term, when it's not possible to lodge a no-confidence motion. But by instead opting for April, the Prime Minister has given the opposition a late chance at tabling such a motion. Meanwhile, Mr. O'Neill has kept up the attack on his former close ally.
And of course, today we are hearing that they are printing checks in the Treasury, printing checks in the Finance Department to use to politically bribe members of Parliament. This has never happened before in our history of our country.
Similar accusations are flying in the other direction. The Finance Minister, Rambo Paita, revealed that on the eve of his exit from government, Sam Basil, who was Deputy Prime Minister and National Planning Minister until he led the defection, oversaw a large payout from the supplementary budget, prepared recently to meet the towering challenges of an economy rocked by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Now, as to the districts, I'm a true payout. BNM can table him the exact amount we paid out, but me like inform him all members of some supplementary payout to one majority, one particular party. BNM can see exact details as to how much was actually paid, but The figure I'm getting is between 60 and 65 million so.
Meanwhile, one of the defectors, William Duma, the incumbent Minister of Commerce and Industry, is now back showing support for James Marape again. Before his latest switch, the MP had cited concerns about handling of the economy, yet the bulk of his party remained with the government throughout. Now, Mr. Duma claims his departure last week was a mistake made while in shock at the opposition's move.
August and economic Friday, it caught all of us by surprise. Confusion came under the confusion. And what you've done is simply undo the wrong and set it the ship for our country.
Mr. Duma has form, having switched sides more than once during the lobbying that preceded the ousting of Peter O'Neill as Prime Minister last year. The Mount Hagen MP's inveterate flip-flopping means there's no guarantee he won't change sides again, another sign that the political situation in Port Moresby remains fluid. Call Johnny Blades, 10A.
Samoans woke yesterday to news the country had recorded its first case of the coronavirus. Prime Minister Tuilaepmai Sailele Malelingaoi announced to the nation one patient in a quarantine facility had tested positive on Wednesday. A second test on the man showed up as negative, but Tuilaepmai says the country needs to remain vigilant. The Prime Minister urged the public to keep faith, wear face masks and continue to follow advice given by the authorities and government officials. But Christine Ravoy reports people are still nervous.
There is a feeling of panic and uncertainty across Samoa today following the announcement of the country's first COVID-19 case. The man was a sailor who arrived in Samoa on a repatriation flight from Auckland last Friday. He has been placed in an isolation ward at Tupua Tamasisimoto Tua Hospital. RNZ Pacific's correspondent in Apia, Aotangavaya, TP Aotangavaya, says while there have been calls for calm, people are not taking any chances.
There is panic amongst the general public of the announcement this morning of the first tested positive case of COVID-19. Few schools in around the town area have been closed. The children have been taken back to their homes. You can see people are now wearing masks.
Aotangavaya says the Samoan government and its people have learned from the devastation caused by last year's measles pandemic when 83 people died, most of them children.
It's been 9 months now since we are in a state of emergency, and the National Disaster Committee imposed safety measures for everyone to, you know, to make sure they are safe. Now you see the reaction from the people when they got the first the news of the first positive case, they're now starting to wear masks. So it's a very good lesson that we've learned from the outbreak of measles last year.
Ina Parkinson works in Apia and says she was alerted to the government's announcement through a text message from a family member at 5 a.m. local time. She decided to pick up her children from school even though there had been no official word from the government that schools should close.
It's better to be safe. I think we've been waiting for it, for something like this to happen. We've got our stock of shopping already done and boxes of masks, hand sanitizers and things like that at home. I was just outside of the office not long ago and I see on the road it's pretty busy. People are panicking, gas station, the shopping, everything. I think people are panicking.
St. Joseph's College teacher Sustina says many parents chose to take their children out of school.
We're still running the final examination today, but we will continue tomorrow. But we're closing down because we have an advice from our own director to continue on the students' exam tomorrow. We haven't heard any information from the government right now. We just wait.
The government has since confirmed schools are to remain open. The cabinet is meeting to consider further safety measures as well as to review the first repatriation flight from Los Angeles next Friday. Olo'o Ingoa, Augustine Ravoy.
As New Zealand secures deals for potential COVID vaccines, it's also working to ensure Pacific Island countries have access to them. New Zealand has announced an agreement with Belgium-based Janssen Pharmaceutica to purchase up to 5 million doses of the COVID vaccine. The Minister of Research, Science and Innovation, Megan Woods, says New Zealand was working not only on behalf of the Realm countries, Tokelau, Niue and the Cook Islands.
Part of our strategy has always been, has always included the realm and the Pacific more broadly. One of the advantages that the Janssen vaccine has is that it is a single dose and that the cool chain storage isn't as arduous as it is for, say, the Pfizer. So the Pfizer needs to be stored at minus 70, which obviously in some Pacific nations is going to be somewhat of a challenge. The Janssen vaccine is more 2 to 8 degrees. It's normal fridge kind of conditions.
And so when you're seeking the vaccine, are you also negotiating on behalf of Pacific countries?
Look, we've seen in terms of our population that that includes the realm countries for a start off, but we do actually see that New Zealand has a responsibility to make sure that our Pacific neighbours are also getting access to the vaccine. And this is work that has been ongoing with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade.
Once those vaccines become available, will there be a form of aid, or will the other countries, such as Pacific countries, have to pay for them?
Look, we've seen this very much within our foreign affairs lens, that we see that this is actually some leadership we need to show in our corner of the world as we face this. So this is something we've factored in from the very beginning.
When can we expect these vaccines to become available, and would the Pacific countries get them first, before New Zealand, or after?
So we expect the Janssen vaccine that we're talking about today to be available in the third quarter of next year, all going well with the clinical trials. And look, we're putting together immunisation plans for all populations, and that will include Pacific countries as well. So all of that detail will follow, and the Ministry of Health is leading on that work.
New Zealand's Minister of Research, Science and Innovation, Megan Woods, speaking to Te Aroha Rolston. A chandelier, skis, a container of only left-footed shoes are some of the unsolicited aid sent to Pacific countries in the middle of major humanitarian disasters. Much of the aid is food or clothing from well-meaning, generous people, but if it is unsolicited, it can sit on wharves, deteriorate, and then have to be thrown out. As another cyclone season begins in the Pacific, the World Food Programme is calling on people to donate responsibly. Don Wiseman has more.
The director of the WFP in the Pacific, Joe Pilgrim, says this unsolicited aid, arriving by the container load or in cartons, can be foodstuffs, water, clothing, household items and so on. But it's typically not what's needed in the middle of a disaster. She gives the example of what happened in Port Vila in Vanuatu at the height of Cyclone Pam in 2015.
And once accessed, half the food items were expired and had to be disposed of. But the total cost in storage, handling and container rental fees to the government of Vanuatu was $2.5 million. Now, $2.5 million is a lot of money to be able to spend on things that you actually need, as opposed to disposing of things that the generous public sent, thinking was going to be helpful when in fact it wasn't.
The humanitarian director of New Zealand's Council for International Development, Aaron Davey, said that some incredible stuff was sent to Port Vila during PAM.
There was a shipping container sent of just left-sided pairs of shoes and things like that. So quite often that's stuff that people are trying to get rid of. Skis, chandeliers, a lot of incredible stuff gets sent over.
Aaron Davey says first responders have made clear what they want.
It's stuff around shelter, equipment to fix water systems and the like. And our recommendation is that if the public does want to collect goods, that they convert these goods to cash, you know, via something like a garage sale or similar.
The WFP's launched its Donate Responsibly campaign. And as Joe Pilgrim points out, the gist of this is send cash instead.
It doesn't need to wait for delivery. As we know, cash can travel the world instantly. It allows the first responders to buy exactly what is needed on the ground and to determine the priorities as they go. It's flexible, so if priorities change, you can change what you decide to use the money for. And investing in local goods, services and businesses keeps people in jobs and helps the local economy recover faster.
In Tonga, at least, the experience is somewhat different. Our correspondent in Nuku'alofa, Kalafi Mawala, points out that Tongans living overseas are wary about sending money home to families during disasters, fearing it'll be misspent.
I think there are a lot of families overseas that are fearful if they send cash, some of these families here will spend it for something else other than their essential needs. And I give you an example. They may go to their church and give all their money there. And they'll go hungry the next day. I think these are some of the things that families overseas are a bit afraid of.
He says one successful activity that's taken place has Tongans in New Zealand paying for food items in this country, then a company in Tonga is contracted to deliver those items.
And they are appropriate food items. They're not like boxes of cereals or other stuff that Tongans don't eat. And so they'll deliver chicken or any kind of meat. They'll deliver vegetables and all those kind of things. You pay cash in New Zealand and a company locally will do that.
The WFP says its Donate Responsibly website is trying to let generous donors know what's appropriate and what isn't in terms of aid, with the aim of getting the most effective aid to those who need it. Kua Don Weisman tēnei.
That wraps up today's program. You can get this or any of our other editions of Dateline from your go-to podcast platform. There's also more Pacific news, current affairs and features on our website, rnzi.com. Nisamo there.